My name is Talat Hamdani, and we are in New York, you know, East Coast. And in the East Coast in New York also, we are all the way out, as they say, on the boondocks in Long Island. You know, it's like 70 miles from Manhattan. It's very nice living out here. Yeah, open, spacious, you know, expensive. But I'm an artist. I love to paint. I'm a person who loves nature. I'm a very optimistic person. I don't believe in failure at all. You know, it's not in my dictionary that I cannot do it. You know, whatever I set my goals on, you know, I am able to accomplish them. Very positive person. And very tolerant. I mean, not that I don't fight or don't get into any conflicts, but I do express myself. And in order to have a dialogue, you need to express yourself to the other person or persons so you find some mutual common grounds. But I work towards, you know, building bridges, especially between, you know, Muslims and the rest of the world and other religions and other faiths. And definitely, no matter how hard I try, my identity has become the mother of Salman Hamdani, who, you know, who gave his life that day and the Twin Towers and the North Tower. So I've settled with that. I try to, that I keep saying it's not my identity, but I find peace when I talk about him now. There was a time I used to cry a lot, used to break down. But now, you know, I find peace and I'm working towards his legacy, keep his legacy alive, who he was, tell the world who he was. He was a very tolerant person. He sang the Messiah, you know, at Queen's College with his music group. And his best friends were Jews. His best teachers were Jewish people, you know. Did he have Muslim friends? Yes, he grew up with Muslim people also. So that is what I would like everyone to know. Salman is the poster face of, you know, 9/11 Muslims who died that day. And I have become his advocate. He is not here to defend himself, so he is my strength and I am his voice. Well, Salman Hamdani, his story, what happened to be was he was an EMT, which means a certified paramedic under the state of, by the state of New York. And he was a cadet of the NYPD. And he was a very kind, compassionate young person, 23 years old, had just graduated in June 6th, 2001. One from Queen's College, wanted to become a physician. He thought himself as being the Jedi because he was born in 77, December 28, 77, and he grew up with the Star Wars generations. And I asked him once, I said, what is Star Wars? And he jumped back. Mama, you don't know Star Wars? You are not an American. And that very year, he had bought a new car for himself, and he said, oh, I got the license plates. Young Jedi, Y-U-N-G, and then J-A-J-E-D-I. So he thought of himself as, you know, an American Jedi. And so that day, he takes the train into, you know, Manhattan. And he was working at Uptown, you know, Rockefeller University, First York Avenue and 65th Street. But when he takes the train, the number 7, it is elevated. And from there, I'm sure he saw the towers burning. They were visible to everybody. So instead of going uptown, he went downtown to help people. And that's how he was since childhood. He would bring sick birds home and nurse them and, you know, help people on the streets if the car was stranded or someone had an accident. In many instances, you know. So that's who he was. And that was his calling. So Salman, you know, he went down there and he gave the ultimate sacrifice. But the story gets, you know, very twisted after that because I called the NYPD, did you send him down there? And I called his friends searching for him, you know, where could he be if they had met him? Because his cell phone, he had forgotten his cell phone the day before on his job. I used to pick him up from the Flushing train station. So Monday evening, I said, he comes knock, he came home. I said, how come you didn't call? So he said, oh, Mom, I forgot my phone on the job. I said, okay. So the next morning when he went to work, he didn't have the phone on him. We searched for him for 10 days. And then someone came to the store and told us there's a flyer circulating, the NYPD and the MTA, with Salman's, you know, bio data from the NYPD when he joined the cadets, asking if they knew. And he said very politely, they want to know if they know him. So I said, did you tell them you know him? And he said, yes, I told them I know this kid. He grew up in front of me. And then the reporters came to my house. So I got the flyer in the mail. It was a nasty flyer. It was wanted by terrorist task force, hold and detain. There were three types of flyers that were sent out. So I only got one type. Has police ID, wanted for terrorist by terrorist task force, and, you know, like nasty one. It wasn't the one that, okay, helped the mom out to find where her son is. So we were interrogated, you know, so they basically, you know, I mean, there was this headline by the New York Post, missing or hiding. You know, the other three newspapers, Newsday, Daily News, and the New York Times, very factual, you know, considerate that the parents are going to Mecca to, you know, pray for their son's return. But, of course, you know, Fox News and New York Post, Murdoch Group, they just like to sensationalize, especially against Muslims from day one. So that's how it transpired, you know, missing or hiding. And they had seen, he was seen at the Midtown Tunnel by somebody at 11 a.m. that day. And the neighbors are saying, we didn't know that we are living next to a terrorist. It was bad. I mean, we didn't have time to grieve. I remember that we used to cry a lot in the morning and the evening. But the daytime we got better because I said, okay, let's go back to work. You go to your store. So the daytime, we were normal people, you know, trying to be as much normal as we could because there was no confirmation even after we came back from Mecca. And so they kept, you know, investigating and asking questions. And Congressman Ackerman left a message on our cell phone, on our home landline, that when you come back, please contact us. We have some news about your son. So I said, okay. So we contacted him and he said, no, you know, we have no news. He just wanted to interrogate her. Then finally he said, Mrs. Hamdani, do you think your son would be involved in any such activities? I said, no, Mr. Ackerman. You know who we are. We were not even extremist people. We were not even very practicing Muslims, to be honest, you know. Normal mainstream, you know, Americans. And he was more mainstream because he wasn't born and raised here, but he was raised here. I brought him when we came. He was 13 months old, February 79. So, you know, to him, this was his country, and he was very disappointed when his other two brothers would say, you cannot run for the presidency, you know. And then on March 20th, you know, the day the city had decided to transition from recovery to rebuilding, two police officers and FBI, whoever they were, at 11:30 p.m., they come to our house, my husband and I, and they inform us that, you know, it was confirmed from the medical examiner's office that his remains were found, you know. And that was, you know, so I said, okay. I wasn't shocked, but I took it as, okay, you know, whatever the insinuations were, they put to rest. His respect is not touched. His dignity is, you know, intact. Our dignity, our patriotism was challenged, basically. At that moment, I said, okay, this is good. And then we had the funeral on April 5th. So that is Salman's story. And I am at peace now. I am at peace now. I don't, you know, even last year, if this was conversation, this interview were held last year, I would have broken down. However, they did, to this day, the NYPD and the city of New York has not acknowledged him legally, officially, as a cadet on the force that died that day. So I'm still, struggling to get that, you know, justice done. I'm still working towards it. It's in the process. 14 years, it's okay. And December, his birthday was December 28th, 1977. When he was in the fourth grade, he went to St. Cecilia's. While we lived in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, you know, I sent them to a parochial school for discipline. My parents sent us to parochial schools in Pakistan for discipline and structure, you know. So I did the same. But I told the principal that my kids will not go to the church. So at that time, he was the only one in the fourth grade. And one day he comes home and he says, I don't want to go to school anymore, Mom. I says, why? Oh, the kids don't like me. They say, you're not a Catholic. Why are you coming here? And I said, okay. And so I went to the principal and says, you know, Sister Maria, this is what's happening. Muhammad doesn't want to come to school anymore because the kids are bothering him. And she says, well, I know, because when they go to church, he sits outside my door. You know, he sits at the office and he does service over here for 40 minutes. But don't worry, Mr. Zamdani, I'll take care of it. So a couple of days later, he comes home and he says, oh, I need a copy of the Quran to bring it to school. I says, why? And he says, oh, our social studies teacher said, told everybody, the whole class, bring in your book of faith. And after that, there were no complaints. So that is what this country needs. Education of other faiths and tolerance and diversity. Until and unless you're exposed to something, like, you know, it's just a concept or maybe just a name without a face. Like right now, you know, Islam is being represented by all the terrorists since 9/11. And after that, you know, what's happening in Afghanistan and now the ISIS and ISIL, you know, all these, you know, groups that are conducting, you know, in a very un-Islamic fashion in the name of Islam, that is the image or the, you know, people have about Muslims. I mean, if it was a Christian group or any other faith of group, and if I did not have any Christian or Jewish friends, I would fear them also. It's but natural. So I have spoken a lot, you know, over the past 14 years at different places, across the country also, you know. That's how I healed myself. So when people hear my story, and more so before even they hear my story, when they see, okay, this is the woman, Ms. Talat Hamdani, and she is going to talk to us, and they see me like, you see me right now. So there are no phobias or fear in their mind at all. And then when I tell them about, you know, what happened to me, you know, I lost my son in this tragedy at Twin Towers. And, you know, their expression changes. Their facial expression changes. And after after the speech is over, after my discussion is over, and then they do come up and they say, you know, oh, we are so sorry for your loss. One of the lady asked me, so why does the Quran advocate for suicide bombing, you know? I said, when did Islam come into the world? You know, like centuries ago, right? In 600 AD. I said, did we have suicide bombers then? And she said, no. I said, so it's man-made. It has nothing to do with the Quran. It's not in the Quran to kill people. On the contrary, it says, you know, that if you save a life, you've saved humanity. So she said, well, why don't you people, the Muslims, speak out? I said, we do. The media does not want to cover us. That is the whole thing. You know, they just want to marginalize us and portray us as the bad people. So coming back to the question, you know, in what impact I have on the people. I mean, when 9/11 happened, I found myself, when I was speaking to the mainstream American people, I found myself defending my faith. And when I was speaking to the Muslim group, I found myself defending American values. You know, like from both the sides, I took the heat. But that, you know, it says there's a verse in the Quran, chapter 4, verse 135. And exactly, I don't know, but it says that you are a witness of Allah and of God. Allah means God, you know. You are a witness of God, and even if you have to testify against yourself or your family, you have to do it. And that's how, what my values are. There are times, you know, there were times, and there are still some times that I feel bad. Oh, I told that person off, I should not have done that. I go up and I apologize. It takes me a time, you know, it takes some time. I'm not a superhuman being. And when someone says something wrong, I correct him. It says in the Quran also, another form of struggle, jihad, is if you see or hear, if you hear someone misrepresenting a fact and you know the real fact, speak up. I speak up for justice, for the right thing. There are times you have to speak up. You should speak up. especially when it comes to your values, your way of life, your belief, your ethics, your moral values. You know, after 9/11, I really changed. I mean, I was a person who always fought for her rights since childhood. You know, I was born and raised in Pakistan. And my parents were highly educated, both of them. And so my father was a PhD, you know, in Persian, and my mom was also a professor of English. She taught at colleges. So I grew up being forbidden to play in the streets and, you know, not to go down and to, you know, dress appropriately, not to hang out with the boys, not to ride the bike, not to whistle, not to drive. Why? Because I'm a girl. Is it a sin I asked my father to be a girl? But he was so liberal. My other three sisters, they went to medical college. So when I did not make it into medical college, my brother said, okay, we'll send her to a St. Joseph's girls' college. And my father said, no, the other three went to a co-ed. She will go to a co-ed also. And then he took me to the Karachi University. And he said, you know, you're going to do master's in English. You're going to do your master's in English. And I think that benefited me tremendously when 9/11 happened. My command of the language, I was able to express myself. You know, so everything happens for a reason. So Salman got his, diversity and tolerance education in the fourth grade. And so the country, nation now needs it, you know. It is important and, you know, it's imperative that, you know, in the best interest of our nation, that the country remain united after what happened after 9/11. In order to understand, you know, another person's pain, you have to know them. You have to know their issues, what, you know, what type of a hardship. And it is, you know, like it says in the Quran, life is a test. We are sent here, and life is a test from the day you are born to the day you die. You go back up there to heaven or wherever we'll end up, I don't know. So it is, you know, a test. And the best way to, you know, like you said, you know, we need collectively sharing our stories, our pain, mutual losses, you know, so we can just, you know, share and make this world a better place instead of so divisive and angry and, you know, prejudiced, you know, and it's not good for your psyche also. When I think about it, you know, I still get angry. And, you know, my voice, the tone of my voice becomes very angry when I think how, you know, tough it was. How could his own country, his own people, accuse him of something which he was not, without even knowing him, you know? And that's why I started speaking. Everybody said, you're very courageous. It wasn't about courage. It was more about his respect. I mean, he gave his life. He went down there. And instead of appreciating and, you know, talking about, like they were talking about all the other people who died over there, especially in the NYPD and the FDNY, they did not even mention him at all. The first few years, you know, I mean, yes, the NYPD, we reached out to them. They gave the funeral. And I reached out to Commissioner Kelly that everybody says he was not a, yes, he was not a police officer. I'm not claiming that he was a police officer. He was a cadet. But if you could give me a shield in his honor, so he did on the first anniversary. But that was done not publicly. If it were a non-Muslim guy, they would have done it publicly. And many people have said, you know, not people that who are friendly with me, but even the NYPD members, that if Salman was a non-Muslim, this would have never happened. The funeral was held at the mosque in Manhattan, you know, on the 93rd Street, the biggest mosque, nice mosque. The NYPD gave him the funeral. And they disappeared after that. And then I had so much on my plate. My husband became sick, had to take care of him. And of course, you're not in a proper state of mind after you lose a child. You know, your son goes out to work and he doesn't come home. And there was the biggest fear for many years. I would pray, I hope all my other two boys and my husband come home safely. And that fear still lingers, still there. Anger comes up. It generates anger when I think about it, but I want to approach it positively because negativity is not good for your life. You know, I saw my husband And he was very angry and upset, and he died 2.5 years later. And they said, you know, it's cancer of unknown origin. And I said, you know, this cancer, 9/11 is the cancer. He just never got, you know, to accept that his son has died, and it took his life also. So we lost actually two people, you know, my son and then my husband. And when the funeral, when I came home and watched the funeral being broadcast, you know, on April 6th, you know, it came in the bottom, you know, a suspected terrorist. So they tried to link him to the terrorist attackers. The possible 19th, that's what they tried to do. And that is not right. So my objective is to, you know, show the American people, especially the non-Muslims, the face of a Muslim who died that day, that his family suffers the same pain as anyone else. Just because we are of a different faith doesn't mean that the pain is to a lesser degree, or we don't, you know, miss our child, you know, or that we are, you know, insensitive, or that we are cruel. No. You know, we bleed the same. You know, a child's loss is a child's loss. And that is something that, you know, I try to get across, my message, that we are just like you, and you are just like us. But how is our pain different, or how is your pain more superior to my pain? It's not. You know, I experience the same pain, maybe worse, because there's so much backlash coming from the society. It was definitely worse. Instead of grieving, I was defending myself, you know. You see, his full name is Muhammad Salman Hamdani. And so in the American system, you go by the first name. In the system of Pakistan, the first name designates actually the sect of the person. So if it's a Muhammad, or if it is a Sayyid, Sayyid is a lineage from the Prophet directly. So my brothers are all Sayyid Adil, Sayyid Azam, you know. And my husband's side, they're all, you know, Muhammad. First name is Muhammad. So, but we go by the second name, Salman. So his second name is Salman. But we called him Salman at home. But when he was in school, he was called Muhammad. So there was a time I used to get a phone call. Can I speak to Muhammad, please? And I would say, which Muhammad? Junior, senior, or the one in high school? You know, so I had told my husband, you know, let's change. So the third one, Zeeshan, his father wasn't here when I delivered him. So I switched around. I gave him the first name, Zeeshan, and his middle name was Muhammad. So when he was in the 10th grade, he goes, how come I'm not a Muhammad? I said, go ahead and change it. But when 9/11 happened, I said, you want to change it? No, I'm happy. I'm good with it, you know. So, and that was the fear that I had told my husband years ago. Do not keep the first name as Muhammad, because there will be discrimination against the child. And it's true. But God is great. He's given me peace, you know. We are all moving forward in life, you know, the two boys and, you know, myself. And I'm surprised I'm happy again. I never thought I would be happy again. I've come to realize, I've discovered this, that I was very angry when 9/11 happened. Very angry. Normal. And there was no peace in my within myself. There was no peace at all. Even after my husband died 2.5 years later in 2004, I was not at peace. And I kept writing, you know, did a lot of writing, and I would address Salman, and I started speaking a lot. And my tone was, you know, I wouldn't say angry or aggressive, but it was high pitch, because what I experienced defending my faith and my son after the fact of 9/11, it generated anger, and I kept questioning why. Why would your own people do this? Why would your own country do this, you know? Why would a certain... And there were people in my own family who sometimes, you know, questioned me, are you sure he wasn't involved with anybody? And, you know, and some of the friends also. So I came to realize that after a few years, when I found... when I am calm, then I'm able to deal with the world on a more, with more harmony. And I'm more willing to listen to what's going on in the society. And I'm more, you know, thirsty and hungry for knowledge about why a certain group of people are against us, the Muslims. So the more I am at peace with myself, I find I'm more better to deal with the, you know, conflicts and issues of the society. It does not make me angry anymore because they have not met a Muslim before. The only, you know, exposure majority of the Americans have, the non-Muslim Americans have, are the terrorists that attacked the Twin Towers. And none of them were American. They were foreign students from Saudi Arabia and Yemen. None of them were Americans. However, the American Muslims are carrying, you know, were attacked and still going on Islamophobia. So if I become angry and retaliate, it will, you know, fortify their belief that Muslims are bad. Do I want to do that? Is it conducive to what, who I am? No. My mission is to build bridges between non-Muslims and Muslims by presenting a very normal human being. And this is not that I've changed since I've come to America. I was the same in Pakistan. You know? So that's what I do. You know, wherever I go now, collective guilt, guilt by association is not right. To hold the whole Muslim faith accountable, especially on American soil, us Muslims are facing it, it's not fair. He was a Catholic, right? Hitler was a Catholic. Do we hold the Catholic responsible for what he did to the Jews? No, we do not. You know, or any, so why are we being held accountable for that? I don't believe in revenge. It destroys you. It does not. You don't gain anything. You know, revenge destroys you. And I think that part of not taking revenge, you know, as they say, you know, revenge is for the Lord. But growing up, I remember I was very angry at one of my friends, you know, and I was like 7, 8, 9 years old. I used to hang out with my grandmother, maternal grandmother, Nanu, a lot. And one day I was, you know, like angry at them, and I was just, you know, blasting them off. I was standing up because she was on the first floor. So my grandmother said, come here, what's happening? I said, oh, no, I'm very upset at them, and they said this and that, and I'm just, you know, blasting them off. And we don't curse. It was forbidden. So she said, okay, I'll tell you the best, you know, it's called baddua, you know, that you can wish someone bad. She said, it's called a baddua in our English language, Urdu language, you know, like a bad, you know, bad words. So she said, I'll tell you the best baddua. I said, yeah, what is it? She said, you say, may God bless you with better insight. You know, that is the best baddua words you can give to a person who's bad, who's evil, for them to turn good. And that, I think, you know, had a great impact on my psychology, that I don't believe in revenge. I just say, okay, God bless you. May God bless you and give you peace. So why should I destroy my peace and my harmony by trying to connive and make them get even with them? Let them be with, you know, with God. And I want to keep my peace. So I don't believe in revenge. And it says in the Quran, if you do not get along with someone, part on amicable terms and change your path. don't cross paths with them. Yeah, that's the best advice I can give you. Because if you want to be happy and harmony and find peace, don't go towards revenge. Go towards positivity and, you know, building bridges with whoever you have a difference with, you know.